Oh, I just heard some echo of myself.
I just heard that too.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, I turned up my headset. Wow, okay, it's that sensitive. Sorry. Alright, I'll keep it in the middle.
Right on.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 149 for September 18th, 2008. Big show today. Is Google buying Valve? Warhammer Online goes live while Ensemble Studios dies. The co-founder of Funcom bails on Conan. ECA founder Hal Halpin says Spore's DRM is causing more piracy than it's preventing. What's up with the Crisis Warhead review? Blizzard dishes some World of Warcraft numbers, and a fan-made Portal expansion that probably isn't a lie.
And Jeremy Williams, live.
Ahoy there, gamers. I'm Dan Stapleton, and with me today are Evan Lottie.
Sorry if I sound weird today, guys. I'm pretty sure I've had cholera for the past couple days.
How do you get cholera?
You roam the Oregon Trail, of course.
Oh, yeah, that is the most common cause of cholera. I've got Andy Bauman out in Salt Lake City, Utah. Boosting.
Oh, hey, what's up? I almost spaced that it was my turn to talk.
Andy Salisbury up in Seattle.
How's it going?
Our long-lost producer, Jeremy Williams, making his triumphant return to the podcast.
What's going on, guys? Good to be back.
Yay! I'm excited.
We have finally allowed Jeremy to return.
Yeah.
I had to distance myself from Jeremy, because if he returned, I knew he would just want to take back over.
You're doing an awesome job. I love the little bits you put at the top, where it's like it sounds like a tinny microphone right before the show. Sounds great.
Thanks.
And also, our longtime correspondent, Gary Witta.
Hello.
Okay, first and foremost, there's been a bunch of news this week. I mean, we've had some slow news weeks, but this is not one of them. First and foremost, Google is probably not going to buy Valve, no matter what the Inquirer says. They ran a story saying that a deal was imminent, but Valve says no, and that is not surprising at all. Did anyone actually think that was actually going to happen?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't make any sense at all. I mean, when you think about Google's business model, it's like they're an ad company first and foremost. You know, they make all of their revenue off of ads. They deliver content, but they don't create it. You know, so buying a game developer, why would they do that? That's like they don't produce any other content. And like if they were to buy a game developer, they would buy somebody who's doing web stuff, not Valve.
I can see why the rumor got started, though, because they are hugely into community sites, and that's if you're going to name one of the gaming sites a community destination, Steam is probably it with like 1.5 million users. So that would be why
it's actually 15 million users.
I'm sorry, that's what and it was 1.5. I just didn't know where the decimal point went.
Pretty important decimal place.
Yeah, no, it is. You're right.
Yeah. Is it possible to conjecture that Google would just buy Steam? Or is that out of the question, do you think?
I guess it would be possible, but Valve would be crazy to sell it.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it was, you know, going to make them all the money in the world. I mean,
As if Steam wasn't already doing that, you know, it's already just done so many great things for them, just as far as digital distribution and everything that they need to be done in order to be, you know, a successful game company.
Right, it's got to be making them money hand over fist. So for them to sell their major cash cow, it would be, you know, crazy unless
dumb.
Yeah, unless they'd be set for life and then some.
As little sense as it makes for Google, this makes even less sense for Valve.
Right, and it kind of makes sense for Google, but not really. I mean, just to be a distributor of games, but not to produce them at all. It just doesn't make any sense for them to buy the developer just to get, maybe, but I don't see it. And Valve has outright denied it, which, you know, if it were true, they'd probably say we can't comment on rumors, you know, but they've outright said, no, it's not happening. So, I really don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't even if they did buy them. I mean, I don't see how it would have any real effect on them. I mean, they've left most of the other stuff they buy pretty much alone, so kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of things whether or not it would happen.
Still fun to talk about, though.
Yeah. Also, in Steam news, EA has put their first game ever on
the Steam service, which is they put both Crysis and Crysis Warhead on there, which, you know, great for all of us because we love getting our games off of Steam. It's by far the most convenient means of getting games digitally so far. And I guess Impulse is also catching up quickly, I think, but Steam has the greater selection, and you know, with EA games, it's just great not to have to use EA Downloader.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is Impulse?
What is what? Impulse? It's Stardock.
Stardock
has their own digital distribution service now, and it's getting a better selection. It's got, I think, 2K signed up, so there's some 2K games on there now. And you know, it's also got Stardock's games like Sins of a Solar Empire, which, you know, that alone is worth signing up for. The advantages it has over Steam is there's like, you know, less of a DRM thing. Like, you don't have to even launch the game in the back, or the application in the background to play the game, which is kind of cool.
I assume that Crysis Warhead is also on EA Downloader and other services.
Yes, well, it's on EA Downloader. I don't know if it's on. It's probably on Direct to Drive as well, because EA has been putting their games on there. But
so, do you think this is EA testing the waters, and they could possibly start to use Steam as an outlet for their other games?
I think it is, I talked to EA PR, and they said they're doing it on a case by case basis. But you know, I imagine if it does well on Steam, they'll do more.
It's kind of a landmark moment for Steam when a company as large as EA, which is fully capable of, you know, setting up and funding its own, you know, in-house service, just decides that Steam is the better option.
Well, it's not necessarily the better option, but you know, it's an avenue to, you know, a bunch of customers that they have that 15 million customer base.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why you know, spend all the money and infrastructure building your own portal when, you know, there's a perfectly good one ready to go across the street?
But they have their own portal. They have the EA Downloader.
But the point is that nobody uses it.
Yeah,
right.
That is an excellent point.
And Valve takes, you know, 30% or whatever, and they figured they'd rather have that money. But I'm sure if they get more, you know, there's got to be a number of downloads they get from Steam that makes it worth their while. So hopefully they'll get that.
Well, they're testing that out. I guess the question is, you know, is Warhead the game to do it for them? Because it did not score that well with us, which was a big surprise, actually. I mean, given that Crysis was, you know, one of our highest scoring games of all time, 98%, when I got the review back from Logan, and you can read the review on gamesradar.com/PC now, but when I got the review back from Logan, it was 73%. I was shocked. Because I was expecting, you know, kind of a repeat of Crysis in here, even though like we knew the game would be short, but you know, it's like 5 to 7 hours depending on how good at FPSs you are. But I wasn't expecting it to drop that dramatically. And you know, to be fair, 73 on our scale still says, you know, it's a good game. You know, we recommend it to fans of the genre, but better options exist, and a better option in this case would be Crysis. But yeah, it was very surprising, and I hadn't had a chance to play it except for a little bit of the multiplayer, which I helped Logan test out, but I got into it yesterday because when it went up on Steam, and I have to say I got to back up that review. It is a fun game, but it's not the game Crysis is. And although Gaz, I think you might like it because
it's like, completely unlike Crysis.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's not completely unlike Crysis, but I think what happened was they heard all the criticisms that came out of, you know, some other reviews and the community, and they drastically overreacted to them. Like, case in point are like the Korean soldiers. In the first game, they took, you know, 7 or 8 shots to kill unless you go for a headshot. Now they take like two or three shots to the body to knock him down, and it's like. It is a lot like Call of Duty, where they're just kind of throwaway, you know, obstacles, you know, in your way as opposed to...
Well, but that sounds more realistic as well, doesn't it? I mean, it shouldn't take 7 or 8 shots to put someone down, unless they're, you know, cranks up on PCP or something.
It may be more realistic, but is it necessarily more fun? Because
yes, absolutely.
Because in Crysis, I felt like these guys were actually a threat to me. And I had to think to you know, outsmart them and you know, compete with them. In this, I'm just killing them by the dozen, and they're you know, just not even. I don't have to think twice about it.
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just like when I thought about Crysis initially, when I think of this soldier that's in this super powered suit, you know, I kind of almost want to feed like that. Like, the two or three shots seems almost preferable. But, you know, again, in its defense, I really haven't had a whole lot of time with the game. But I don't know, just when I think of a soldier in a super suit, like, I just want to be able to be all different kinds of badass, you know?
Right, I'm all for that, but I just think it's too easy. And, you know, I've been playing on hard, and it's still pretty easy. Another thing is they increased the rate you heal, so it's really hard to die in combat. So, like, you really have to kind of put yourself out in the open and stay out there for a long time in a hail of bullets to die.
But does that lend to any more of the suit, like, strength and speed that you can use while you're, like, in a firefight, and you can be more creative with your options that way at all?
Not really. I mean, I'm not finding myself using the, and this is one of the criticisms that Logan had of it too, was that it doesn't really encourage you to use the suit a lot, because a lot of the time you're in a vehicle running on a straight path, you know, from point A to point B. You're being told, you know, you got to hurry, you got to catch this guy. So it's like there's no, it's actually disincentivizing you from going off and exploring and using your suit in creative ways. So it's, you know, it's just kind of it's a different tone of the game, a little bit less, you know, they're not telling you to, like, you know, kind of do your own thing anymore. It's very directed, much like Call of Duty, except like the openness of it has been scaled down a little bit, but it's still kind of the you know, wide lane as opposed to a train track that, like, Call of Duty is. Like, you can kind of flank guys a little bit more, but yeah. But it's still very, you know, pushing you at a much faster rate than Crysis did. And also my other complaint about it would be that the production value has taken a little bit of a dive. Like, they don't have the same kind of cutscenes they had in Crysis. A lot of the story is delivered, like, backstory is delivered through, like, a black screen with audio over it, which is kind of lame.
That's pretty lazy.
Wow. Well, it's not necessarily lazy, it's just cheap, and it seemed like they were trying to make a game very cheaply. I think Logan nailed it with this. The multiplayer, though, is pretty entertaining. I got to hand it to them there. They added, I mean, one thing that they went out with in Crysis without was just a simple team deathmatch. You know, they had their power struggle thing, which was, I guess, they decided it was too complicated, and, you know, I think they were probably right there, because there were too many rules to follow in that multiplayer mode. Like, you had to capture different types of points, like power and like alien technology points, and then you'd finally be able to unlock vehicles and stuff like that. And I think that was just too difficult for people to really catch on to and figure out right away. So I guess they scaled that back and added just team deathmatch. And Logan and I were playing, and we were having, you know, quite a bit of fun in that. They've got a few new maps and stuff. Oh, and one thing they did do that was very nice was they let you install the multiplayer client on a bunch of computers and play it over LAN with just one install key.
Nice.
That's nice.
So you can't really blame Crytek, though, because, I mean, the original game divided people. People liked either the first half or the second half, typically. I'm one of the people who liked the second half. That was more linear and more, like, you know, on rails and had more scripted events. And the game that it was competing with at the time, Call of Duty 4, destroyed it on the sales charts. So I don't blame them at all for going this route. And I actually look forward to this more than I would have if it was just more of the same.
Now, I can't blame them either, and I understand their reasoning for it. I just think they may have overreacted a little bit, and it cost them what made Crysis Crysis, and that, like, what we loved about Crysis is, you know, diluted in this.
Yeah.
Just a quick poll. Who's planning on playing it coming up in the next couple weeks?
I'm already playing it. So.
Yeah, I plan on playing it, but I haven't yet, so I kind of feel like I can't bring much to the conversation.
I will say I'm going to play it because it's on Steam.
Yeah, yeah, I just downloaded it this morning. Same here.
Yeah, that'll probably be the deal breaker for me as well. I'll check it out since it's on Steam. It's no hassle to get it.
What's the word on the DRM? Is there any
DRM?
Is it Steam?
There is DRM. Okay. It's actually unclear. I'm still trying to get out of EA exactly what the Steam restrictions are. But there is a widely misreported number online, which is that it has the same DRM as Steam, as Spore, sorry, where it restricts you to 3 installs. This actually has 5 installs, so it's like Red Alert, not like Spore. Well, you know, it's the same system, but increased number of installs. So, but I guess EA is planning to release a statement saying, no, it's not 3, it's 5. So, you know, that's a slight difference. Apparently, they're saying that there's some difference between the disk version and the Steam version. They're not exactly clear on what that is yet, so they're going to be getting back to me on that.
It would suck if they included the same DRM on Steam. I mean, part of the great thing about Steam is you can log in on any system and download your games.
There is secure ROM on it. I'm not sure exactly what it is, though, or like what the restrictions are. I mean, like BioShock did the same thing on Steam, though. I mean, when you buy BioShock on Steam, you still were limited to those same activations, which you know have since been they've since turned that off, but. But yeah, so Steam does not necessarily mean that there's not going to be additional DRM on there, which is stupid because Steam has its own built-in DRM. I mean, you can't even play, you know, if I have Team Fortress 2 and Crysis on my Steam account, I can't play one on one machine and the other on another machine at the same time because you can only log in from one. So in some ways, it's more restrictive than the Spore DRM. But you know, I find it. You know, fine for my purposes. I guess one person, speaking of the Spore DRM, one person that's not wild about it is Hal Halpin, the president of the Entertainment Consumers Association. He wrote a column was it Game Daily? This DRM did nothing to combat the cracking of the game. In fact, it essentially helped in training legions of customers how to become pirates and legitimized their rationalization in the process. So, you know, he's basically come to the same conclusion that we have, which is that it's this DRM, you know, since it was cracked early, you know, before the game even came out in North America, it was you know available for download. So it didn't prevent a single person who wanted to download it off a P2P network. But all it did was piss off people that you know are upset that their game is being restricted in any way, and encourage them to go and pirate the game. So, and you know he's very right, and it is great to see. Somebody, you know, highly placed in the industry, actively criticizing EA for their DRM practices, and you know, maybe that will get their attention. And we should also point out, though, that EA has told MTV Multiplayer's blog that they will be patching the DRM to allow you to revoke an activation token. So when you uninstall the game, you will be able to revoke that installation. So you'll be able to use that again on a different computer, which is a great step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I've just got to think that on the creative side, the more and more this kind of backlash and attention the DRM gets, like for somebody like Will Wright and his team that's worked on this game for years and that's just really put so much energy and creativity into it, they've got to be frustrated that post-release the DRM's getting more attention than the game itself, don't you think? And hopefully, you know, if that's the case, they'll relay that to the business side of EA and other companies that, you know, we want the attention of the post-release to be on the game and not, you know, this crazy security stuff. So,
right, it's got to be terrible for any creative team to be just blindsided by you know they've created a game, they want people to enjoy it, and for that to be artificially just damaged by for its reputation to be damaged by something that was beyond their control. Although I think that it'll take more than the developers being pissed off to change EA's mind, because it's really not up to the developers. It's the developers work for EA. EA does not work for them.
Right.
So it for all of the all of you listeners out there who have ever worked for a big company, you know, one employee saying they're not happy with something, you know, that's not going to. And even a large number of employees saying they're not happy with something isn't necessarily going to shift a policy.
I'm sure you guys already talked about this, but where do you stand on the Amazon bomb, briefly?
I mean, I think it's pretty effective means. I mean, how else can you organize a response like that?
I mean, for me though, I kind of chalk it up a little bit to groupthink, where. I mean, there's people on message boards that say like, "Hey, everybody, go to Amazon and post reviews, and we'll, you know, make a big deal out of it." It doesn't seem as genuine to me, and
as genuine as what though?
Like actually, you know, writing a letter to us, for example, or another publication, or
right.
EA
but none of that is going to get their message across to EA as much as actually impeding their ability to sell the game to people that aren't aware of this. I mean, this is a form of protest that actually raises awareness of the issue. It does suck that they put, you know, 1-star reviews on there, because that you know makes people who are just casually looking at the game, you know, and they want to look for good games, and they might miss the game entirely because it has a low rating that it didn't deserve. But you know, it is good, I think, that they are posting their concerns about you know, consumer, like something that harms the consumer experience, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you in both counts, but I think that the cost of doing the 1-star review is too great. I mean, it's completely unfair to the developers to post that kind of review on Amazon and include the star as a rating strictly for this DRM that they disagree with and not about the game that they're supposed to be reviewing.
Right, but when you think about it, and you know, this is how I'm sure a lot of them are thinking about it, is that they're rating the product, not the game. They're rating what you are buying if you buy this product. And in their opinion, any game, you know, that's kind of shackled by this, by a harsh DRM like this, is not worth your money. So, and Amazon ratings are different from critic ratings.
I just feel for the developers in this case, because they spent, you know, what, 5 years of their life on this thing, and it got, you know, screwed up by this DRM at the last minute. It's causing 1-star reviews.
All right. Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, I think that's it must totally suck for them.
It's like, it's not fair. Like, you wouldn't take a star off a movie review because the parking at the theater was really bad.
Right.
You know?
But at the same time, you know, like I say, these are different reviews. I mean, this is a consumer reviewing the actual product he's received versus a critical review of the game content. You know, that's a little bit different.
I don't know. I have a hard time recognizing it as like a very valid form of protest, because I kind of chalk it up to just the level of discourse we have on the internet, where instead of, like, I don't know. I mean, as much as like people rallying together is going to have results and that it's going to get attention like that, it's, I don't know, it just doesn't seem as effective as actually finding another way to express themselves. It's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, what other way can they express themselves? I mean, this is a very creative way of doing it. I have to hand it to them. I wouldn't have thought of that. But, you know, and it does have its negative aspects, as we discussed, but I don't think that, and short of like writing, you know, a bunch of letters to EA, which, you know, for an issue like this, which is, you know, it's annoying, but it's not like gonna mess up your life. It's hard to get people to really, you know, go the extra mile for that. So I think, you know, this is something that didn't require a lot of effort for people to do, but it's something where everybody who is, you know, irked about this and, you know, but, you know, doesn't want to pay 40 cents for a stamp, which I realize sounds lazy, but people are pretty lazy.
Right. I mean, I guess
this is a much easier way for them to register their dissent.
I tend to believe that a lot of those people hadn't actually even played the game or tried installing the game and just kind of read about the DRM and decided to post a review, which...
Right, but, I mean, that's fine, though, because they've read about the restrictions and say, no, I'm not going to buy this, just on principle, and that's... that they're talking about their principles.
Sure, yeah, I mean, they're absolutely free to do that, but, I mean, it's just in terms of evaluating a product in a genuine way, but I don't know.
But like I said, they're not evaluating the product. They are evaluating the product, but they're educated in what the product is, or how the product is restricted.
Sure. Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's valid. I think, but you know, like, I think it has consequences that I wish it didn't have. But I think it is a valid form of protest. Moving on a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of you are very sick of hearing about DRM. It's like all that's been in the news lately. So, we should cover. Okay, so Blizzard has, you know, they haven't really said much about historically how much it takes to run World of Warcraft, or like money wise, and how much they're bringing in. They did come out this week and say it cost them $200 million to both produce the game and keep it running over the last 4 years.
Wait, what do you mean? What does that mean? $200,000?
$200 million.
I'm sorry, $200 million total?
Yes.
Wow. So they make that in 2 months, right?
Give or take, yeah. What did you say?
And that actually sounds low to me.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because, I mean, it couldn't have cost them more than, like, let's say $50 million to actually make the game. That's like
I would take issue even with that. I mean, what are you basing that on?
Well, I mean, I'm basing it on how much it costs to make games in general. I mean, usually it's
yeah, but I think MMOs are more expensive and they take longer to develop and they take larger teams.
Isn't $50 million pretty high though in terms of the
Look at it this way. Did you see this other quote that was in the news the other day? Bobby Kotick from Activision saying that if you wanted to get into the MMO space and seriously challenge Warcraft, it would take a $1 billion investment, maybe even twice that.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but when you think about it, if you want to get in the market and challenge Warcraft, you have to do something like a generation ahead of Warcraft, which, you know, 4 years ago, something that came out 4 years ago, you know, there's just an escalation there. So
I think even if you had $1 billion, the only viable way to get people to play it and to beat Warcraft would be instead of paying $15 a month, they pay you $15 a month.
There you go.
Then you get people signed. That's the only way you could get that many numbers. And you'd run out of money pretty fast, too.
Right. Well, I mean, I think if somebody were to make a game that is at least as good, maybe a little better than World of Warcraft, and made it free to play, then they would have a chance at taking people away from WoW.
And I mean, just to put this in context, Rockstar allegedly spent $100 million to create GTA 4 for console. I mean, the $200 million doesn't sound that much off considering it released in 2004. Is that right?
Or, yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, okay. So $200 million wasn't just the development cost; it was also the maintenance costs.
Right.
So that,
yeah, and obviously it's an expensive game. I mean, you know, I would love to see their balance sheets. I mean, we can take a rough guess at what they're pulling in based on, you know, you can take their subscription cost and extrapolate that by, you know, roughly how many people we know play the game to get a rough guess at their revenue. But I would also love to know their overhead, because, I mean, they've got a whole building filled with nothing but GMs.
Yeah,
and I'm sure those
absolutely.
Guys are not pulling down big money. But, you know, have you seen the 302 patch notes?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is even before the Lich King. I mean, the patch notes, I mean, it looks like a whole new game design.
It's huge.
I mean, it's like they're not reinventing, because obviously the game, you know, it's more evolution. But, you know, they've got people that are constantly, huge teams that are constantly in the process of evolving the design of that game. So, you know, their burn rate, it wouldn't surprise me if it was very, very high.
Right. And I know I've heard several times from different people that their development team is in the neighborhood of 140 people, which is, you know, huge. So, but you know, when you think about it, that even that many people for 4 years, isn't that, I mean, that part of their budget can't be that big. I mean, you know, surely, you know, it's in the tens of millions, but, you know, that's still just a small chunk of $200 million.
Yeah, I just actually pulled the patch notes into Microsoft Word. 8,900 words. Okay, yeah.
So those patch notes just go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still saying, despite this $200 million number, they're still phenomenally profitable, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, they're making that. I think in the merger talks, when they were talking about Activision and Blizzard and Vivendi coming together, they put Blizzard in there because Blizzard had generated the lion's share of Vivendi's profits, which were it was something like $1 billion they had generated last year.
Wow.
So. I'm just playing around on the calculator here. I mean, and I'm pulling these numbers out of my ass. But if we're just going to average it out, let's assume that of those 140 Blizzard people that you mentioned there, let's assume as a conservative estimate that the average salary is $75,000 a year, and that's averaging out people that would obviously be on less than that and people that would obviously be on quite a bit more at the top end. So 75,000. Let's do it now. 75,000 times 140. That's $10.5 million a year. So times that by however many years that they've been going. And that's just the design people. That's not technical people. That's not server infrastructure. That's not GMs. You know, I'm not surprised. What's that?
I think that might be the entire WoW team.
Okay. You know, we're not just talking about salaries here. What are they spending on, you know, real estate and
servers,
you know, the server. I mean, they're putting new servers up all the time. That hardware isn't cheap. The bandwidth, I mean, sooner or later it starts to turn into real money.
So yeah, I mean, obviously the costs are going to, you know, pile up and up and up, but, you know, $200 million, you know, that's an awfully round number, so I'm sure it's not precise, but, you know, I think it's probably in that ballpark.
I think one reason I thought
the $1 billion figure that Bobby Kotick was talking about was even more interesting, because that, I mean, that just goes to show how much of a huge risk you have to take now to enter into that market, because it's two components now, and you need both. You've got to have a billion. You've got to have, if you agree with Bobby Kotick, you've got to have $1 billion to invest, which is obviously a serious amount of coin, and you've got to have a game which, on its own merits, is going to be as good as or better than World of Warcraft, which is obviously no mean feat. Now, you can have one or the other. You can have a really great game, but if you don't invest in it enough, it's going to disappear. And you can spend $1 billion making a game that's not as good, and you're going to lose your $1 billion. So, you know, it's not surprising. It's hard when you put that together. It's hard to imagine where is the next World of Warcraft serious contender coming from, if not from within Blizzard itself.
Right. I mean, by that logic, this is it. We've seen the high point of the MMO business. It's WoW from here on out.
Not necessarily, and there are other companies that have that money. There's, I mean, EA has that money.
No one's gonna.
Yeah, we know how successful they've been in the MMO space.
I don't know. I think that it will come, and probably not from Blizzard. And that Blizzard may have like even a second like mega MMO hit, but I think that eventually somebody's gonna unseat them. I mean, it's gonna happen eventually.
I mean, you'd like to think that people are just going to want something fresh, a new universe, a new context, right? For an MMO.
Right, but I mean, Blizzard might even do that. But I mean, eventually right. Somebody's going to unseat them. I mean, there just can't be one company that's on top forever. And it's just
Penny Arcade had a piece about the $1 billion thing the other day, and I thought there was a couple of quotes in there that were interesting. Just kind of touching on the idea that because MMOs are persistent. You know, player bases are persistent. When you think about single player games, they borrow player bases for a certain amount of time. You know, you play a game and then you get done with it and you put it back on the shelf and then you go looking for the next game. But once an MMO gets its hooks into you, that's kind of like marrying the game, and you're off the market. You're not available to other games. And I think what the Penny Arcade thing was said, even if you found another game to play, who would you play it with? Everyone else is raiding tonight. And that's exactly true. You know, it's so hard now to. I think that's the problem, is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, is that around Warcraft, because it's got so many players, it's the game that's got all the guides, all the support, all the players, you know, all the infrastructure, you know, it's just the best supported game. And so to go and spend time in another game where, you know, it's a kind of sparsely populated world, and you go online and you can't find many guides because everyone's making guides for World of Warcraft, it's just harder and harder to build any kind of momentum against a game that's become so big.
Now, this is actually a really good point to ask this, because today is the launch day of Warhammer Online, which, you know, is EA funded. I don't know if they spent $1 billion on it, but they've, you know, certainly spent a lot of money. Do you think it is going to be in any way a serious challenger to WoW?
Well, I think the fact that I didn't even know that until you pointed it out says something, don't you?
Maybe.
Like, has there been a big media frenzy around the fact that this is the launch day? When Lich King comes out, you know, that's going to be on TV. There's going to be lines around the block, and that's for an expansion. And I'm just hearing now that, I mean, I'm not, you know, hitting the gaming blogs every day, but I feel like if Warhammer Online coming out was going to be a big event, someone like me who does make it their business to kind of try and stay up to date what's going in the gaming world probably would have heard more about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Warcraft is to the MMO space as StarCraft 2 is to Korea. You know, it's just like there's not going to be another RTS that comes along to supplant it. There won't be another MMO that comes along to supplant WoW.
The interesting thing about Warhammer coming out and, you know, being a competitor with WoW is that they're the ones that started the orcs, humans kind of universe that WoW heavily
borrows
from.
That's not true, because Tolkien did it.
You know what it's like? It's like getting together with a bunch of your friends and saying, we're going to start a new country and we're going to take on China. Seriously, I mean, it's almost that preposterous.
It is very David versus Goliath, isn't it? But I mean, this is, you know, a pretty good-sized David in that it's EA. No, David's been working out.
The point is that you need both sides of the equation. EA clearly has the money, but if having money equaled success in the MMO space, EA would be the most successful MMO company out there. In fact, they're one of the least. They've not had a significant success in the MMO world. In fact, you know, their biggest attempt with The Sims, where, you know, it was one of the biggest brands in gaming, was a complete up. So, you know, what does that tell you about, you know, what else you need aside from money to have a success in the MMO world these days?
Right. Does anyone here have any plans to play Warhammer?
Nope.
I can't play MMOs.
I really want to give it a try, but I'm not so sure that I'll drop it for World of Warcraft, you know? Because, I mean, it looks interesting, but I've heard that it's essentially the same game with different.
Well, this is the thing that worries me the most. Of course, you know, if you go way back to the beginning of time, you know, obviously there's been a lot of accusations flying around that Blizzard cribbed a lot of its world from Warhammer. Now, I don't know much about the Warhammer world. That may or may not be true, but I think that, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. And so, you know, now that you know, Blizzard has kind of got past all that and made the world their own, you know, the world is what it is. And so you're probably going to have a kind of a weird reverse thing happening now where Warhammer comes out and people just go, oh, this is way too similar to Warcraft. There's no special reason for me to play this game when Warcraft's already offering much the same experience and much better supported and much more successful.
Right, and that's actually something that's happened in StarCraft versus Warhammer 40,000 as well. Like people see the Tyranids from Dawn of War 2, and they're like, oh, that's just the Zerg. They totally ripped off the Zerg. When in actuality, the Tyranids were on the tabletop game for, you know, like 10 years before StarCraft came along. But yeah, so it's just a matter of you know, Warhammer failing to establish itself as a game franchise for way too long.
For me, though, also, one incentive players might have to try Warhammer Online or a different MMO is kind of they might want to have a feeling of being like a bigger fish in a smaller pond, almost, like, because the game is new, isn't as established, they have an opportunity to make a bigger impact on a server, you know, be a bigger guild potentially. So, I mean, that's one incentive possibly, but
yeah, I mean, it is a chance to be a big fish in that pond, and when a new pond opens up.
Yes.
I have a feeling just from internet friends and buzz that I don't think it's going to pull players away from WoW, but maybe it'll pull the players from Age of Conan or people who aren't really playing an MMO at the moment and get them in, but I don't really see it blowing up. I don't even know if it can compete with Age of Conan, but I guess that game's sort of on the backside of its success.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Conan, I think, will probably have some good longevity to it. It is obviously proved at this point that it's not going to challenge WoW.
Yeah.
It is in the news a little bit now, where one of the co-founders and one of the head guys on the development team has left Funcom after like 16 years. But you know, I just don't see that as really changing it. It's just from the article here that's on the Age of Conan community site. It says forum producer and game director Gout Godanger. Godadger, has chosen to resign from Funcom after working on Age of Conan since the initial conception, and he leaves the company after 16 years. Godadger was one of the original founders of Funcom and leaves a large legacy, having contributed to making Funcom the largest MMO company in Europe. I've done my very best to make this a fabulous game, but I have concluded that there are elements which I am dissatisfied with. I have decided to act on this, and as a result, I have chosen to leave Funcom. It is time to get new fresh eyes on Age of Conan, and I wholeheartedly support the appointment of Craig, who's the guy that Craig Morrison is the guy they've appointed to replace him. I had a fantastic time these last 16 years, and I am very proud of the many things Funcom has achieved. Funcom and Conan will always be a big part of me. Blah blah blah. And he's certain that Age of Conan's future will be in the best hands. I don't think that's going to change a whole lot for that game. Do you guys? And somebody at the top. I mean. Say somebody at the top of World of Warcraft were to leave right now and somebody new came in, do you think that would change the tone of the game at all?
I doubt it. It seems like, I mean, in the case of Conan, even though it's on the back end of its success, it's still got a relatively good amount of success. So, you know, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Well, some people would argue that a lot of things were broken, especially at launch. There were several features that were promised, even on the box, that didn't make it at launch.
But I don't know, the tone that I got from that story that you just read was that, you know, he thinks that there are, you know, big things that need to be changed and everything like that, you know, that there needs to be systems that are reworked. And it just doesn't seem like that's something that's very viable that would actually happen.
Right, and especially for gathering, you know, getting new players in there. I remember a talk at GDC that Jack Emmerich from Cryptic gave. He was saying that you have basically the launch month to get people. You can't launch without features and say you're going to do it later and still expect people to stick with you, because, you know, they're going to get in there, they're going to play it, they're going to see it doesn't have these features, they're going to go do something else. Even if you add those features later, they're not going to necessarily come back. So I don't think that this is going to make a big difference for Conan either. But So in some sad news, the studio responsible for the Age of Empires games and Age of Mythologies, Ensemble, is that Microsoft owns them. They're currently working on the Halo Wars RTS for the Xbox 360. Microsoft has announced that after they complete that game, they're going to shut down the studio, which is kind of a blow to PC gamers, because that studio had a strong history in the PC, even if their current project wasn't going to be on the PC.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. This is basically the second big strategy studio that Microsoft has swallowed, other than Westwood, right?
No, that was EA that got.
Oh, EA. I'm sorry. Gosh, yeah.
but even Westwood is still, you know, open. They haven't closed the studio, even though it's kind of been. I guess it's been kind of merged and renamed into EALA, but it's like those guys are still there, and still doing what they want to do. Whereas in this case, it looks like they're gonna, you know, dissolve the team, and they said they're gonna try and place the developers elsewhere. But you know, it's kind of sad to see that team broken up.
What does it Microsoft mean for also, AOE?
I mean, Microsoft has said that they plan to keep AOE going. Some speculation that I've read online is that a developer of that size would cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 million a month to run, which it's a huge cost, and you know, a lot of people just don't quite wrap their brains around how much these games cost to make, especially when it's a developer that's working on multiple projects like Ensemble was.
For AOE, they had big, huge games develop the Asian expansion, right? What was it called?
Right.
Yeah, I can't remember. So
yeah,
it was the
Asian Dynasties, I believe.
I don't know if they'd be available to contribute to the next Age of Empires, possibly, but...
Yeah, I'm sure that that's probably the direction that Microsoft wants to take it, is find a smaller, less costly developer to do it. It always disturbed me, though, to see a big company like Microsoft or like EA come in, buy a developer, and then, you know, they make a couple games and then shut them down. Microsoft did this earlier with Shadowrun. It's like, why buy it if you're just going to shut it down and then, you know, let the IP, especially in the case of Shadowrun and the MechWarrior IPs, why buy it if you're just going to make one game and then shut it down and let the IPs go dormant?
I wonder how that affects your productivity, too, if you know that you're out of a job as soon as you finish your current project.
Yeah. It's got to take some of the incentive out, huh?
Well, and what does this mean about, you know, what they view the game's prospects for success are? I mean, they're obviously not having these people hang around to make a sequel.
Yeah, well, I mean, they may just, you know, create a new studio from, you know, a select, like the Halo Wars team. They could very well do that within Microsoft Game Studios, which, you know, of course, why do that when they could just shrink Ensemble? So, I don't get it.
I mean, hopefully it'll be another one of those situations where some key people from Ensemble go off and make up their own studio, make some awesome original RTS game that they've always wanted to do but couldn't do before, and, you know, everybody will be happy.
And are subsequently bought by Microsoft or EA, and then the same thing
exactly.
But that's happened to, like, Peter Molyneux a couple times now, hasn't it? I mean, he was at Bullfrog, which was bought by EA, and then he went to Lionhead, which was bought by Microsoft. And, yeah, and who knows? Maybe Microsoft will shut down Lionhead after they ship Fable 2.
It's the circle
of
life.
Molyneux happily sold those companies.
Yeah,
I don't think he's too upset about it.
Probably not, but I just don't understand. It's all, you know, like they said in the press release that it's, you know, it's all business related decisions to keep Microsoft Game Studios on its growth path. But I just don't get the business stuff. That's why I'm not a businessman.
Yeah, Microsoft's new Jerry Seinfeld growth path or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, the totally nonsensical thing, yeah.
Canceled, not canceled.
Yeah. So, last on our news list today is Portal Prelude, which is a fan-made expansion that kind of came out of nowhere. It's being made by a team of three French guys that they were trying to operate under, like, complete secrecy until they were almost done. They're saying it's going to come out end of the month, or early next month. 9 chapters, 19 test chambers, 48 challenges, 6 advanced maps, and a new storyline, including new voice work and commentaries, which is pretty impressive for a team of three guys. You know, it's, of course, you'll have to have, you know, the original Portal to play it, because it's basically a mod, but it's a really big mod. So,
is it free?
It's free.
Is it going to be considered canon to the, you know... You know, if they
definitely
do,
not.
They do like a
definitely
prequel, because your character is all mysterious. If they try to answer any questions, like what is Valve going to say?
Yeah, because Valve's allegedly working on...
it's just like Star Wars fan fiction. It's not like George Lucas cares, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
I mean, it's totally unofficial.
Valve's working on their own prequel, essentially. That's kind of what we know. And
but, a great way to get a job at Valve these days, if it's any good. That seems to be how they do it these days.
Right. That's how the TF2 guys and the guys at Counter-Strike I guess Left 4 Dead was being developed by Turtle Rock, so that's just a case of Valve buying an existing studio. But I guess Portal itself was like a student project. They hired the developers, right?
Yeah.
Indeed. Yep. Kim Swift. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe that's what these guys are going for. They want to be on the Portal 2 team.
It's when you think about it, pretty much everything that Valve has done since Half-Life has come from the community in some way.
Except for Left 4 Dead.
Except for Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
They haven't done that yet, though, Citizen Kane. It's still true until Left 4 Dead comes out.
Right.
If this product is really good, I wouldn't put it past Valve to actually take them on board before it's released and sell it.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, according to their website, which is portalprelude.com, they've had Valve contact them and give them their full support, saying it's great they're doing this. So they're in touch with them. It could be once Valve gets their hands on it and sees just how good the quality is, maybe there will be a job offer in their next email. Who knows?
Yep.
The trailer they released for the game, I mean, the gameplay looks very advanced, like very kinetic and fast. The way it's, half of it they were just showing levels, the other half was showing like this extremely fast gameplay. What was most interesting to me, like, their actual human characters in the game that they were showing. I mean, it's a prequel. It's sort of like it's supposed to be before GLaDOS, like the computer system that you're against in the game. Before it's even like plugged in, quote unquote. But it was just kind of interesting that they're actually putting human characters in there. It's kind of weird to see them in there. But yeah.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see, how it comes out. I'll certainly play it, and we don't know that kinetic gameplay might be in one of the challenge modes. Like complete this in a certain amount of time. So it's probably very similar to Portal in pacing, I would guess. Like there's no like time limit in the normal test chambers, I would guess. As I have pulled out of my ass. Anyway.
Right. I mean, for me, I'm looking forward to it because, I mean, the first Portal, you felt like you were taught these techniques. You had a tool set of, like, what you could do. And then just as you were, like, kind of getting to grips with that, the game was over before you could really get into the advanced stuff. So hopefully
that's why they had all the advanced stuff in there, all the advanced challenge and,
challenges. Right. I mean, that was mostly time trial and, like, you can only shoot so many times. You can only take those steps. But
there were some advanced maps.
Right.
But yeah.
Not terribly advanced, though. I was always waiting to see what the user community would do. So this is, I'm looking forward to this.
So Jeremy, did you ever play the ones that Bethesda put out?
I did, yeah. Those were good. Those were definitely on the complexity level I was hoping for.
Right.
Did you guys ever play like the Flash version of Portal? That was kind of popular.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun.
And then what some people did was they actually made some of those maps into the actual Portal maps.
Right.
And I haven't seen those, but they look really crazy. Like, if you're looking for really crazy challenges, I think those might be up your alley.
Huh.
So, let's see. Moving right along, we've got a couple of release dates. There's a few to confirm here. Lich King, Wrath of the Lich King, the WoW expansion, has been confirmed. Guys, mark your calendar for November 13th.
That's my birthday.
Yep, I'm all over it.
Happy birthday, Andy.
That's your birthday?
Indeed.
What?
Overshadowed what a by Wrath incident. Of the Lich King.
Not in my heart.
Bastards.
Yeah, don't try having a party that night.
No one will show up.
You can have it online.
Yeah.
Everyone will show up.
Is there a slash birthday emote?
But you can slash dance, and that's all that matters.
Dance parties. Prince of Persia, the new like kind of revamped version from Ubisoft, is coming out December 12th. Hopefully not everyone will be too busy playing World of Warcraft to play it. There have been a couple of delays. Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway has been pushed to the PC version has been pushed to October 7th. So it's just a week behind the console versions. We've been talking to those guys. Apparently, there was a crash bug that affected like one out of every 200 systems that they were just dedicated to wiping out before they ship it. So it's good. It's a good thing they have that dedication to not shipping a buggy game. So good for them. And you know, it's worth waiting a week to not have your game crash every so often, I think. Also, Mirror's Edge, EA put out a press release today saying that the console versions will be shipping by the holiday, but by the whole holiday buying season, but the PC version is slipping to 09.
Oh, what?
It's a pain, but you know, you do kind of have to understand that, you know, they're anticipating selling a whole lot more on the console, so they got to prioritize that, and it's an unfortunate truth. But you know, hey, at least they're giving it to us at all, unlike, you know, some other developers, other, you know, games. So.
Yeah, I played that at Invision. It's going to be a really fun game. I'm looking forward to that one.
I can't wait for that game. I just hope it lives up to my expectations, because my expectations are really high.
Do you ever get motion sickness, Gaz?
Yeah, but like in a good way. Like when I was looking, the thing that I like about it, and maybe it's different when you're actually playing it, but the thing that I loved about that game, just from looking at the videos, is it's the first person shooter that actually, well, not even a shooter, but the first person game where you actually feel like you're organically moving in the world and not just kind of like gliding around in the world. Like the sense of kind of footsteps and movements feels real.
Like you're part of a full body.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. I mean, when I played it, I said this in our comments there last week, but like, it feels like the technical aspects of what you're doing with the controller are, you just really kind of feel like a fighting game and a rhythm game almost, in the way you're establishing this tempo with the environment and your character and the controls, and like the execution of your moves, your slides and your jumps and stuff. It feels very like the timing and the sense of timing that was really cool, I think. I mean, it's not just an action game, is how I would just describe it to people. But yeah,
I remain cautiously optimistic. I think it'll be cool. I don't know if it'll be really cool, but I think it'll be cool.
It's gonna be this year's Portal. Not only, not just because it's white.
What? We already have shiny. We already had this year's Portal.
Yeah,
Braid, or what?
Braid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we haven't played it yet because it's not on PC yet, or is it?
Oh, that's right.
No, it's not. It's not yet.
But it will be though.
Okay.
It will be. Let's take a couple questions.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Brad Safransky, a.k.a. Shat Pansky in COD4. I'm a longtime reader since 1994 and listener to the podcast and proud Next Top Reviewer finalist. Anyway, I just wanted to say a couple things about the Showdown LAN in Worcester. First off, it was just a great time. It was totally awesome to hang out with hundreds of my fellow gamers and get involved in some Call of Duty 4 tournament action, although I gotta say, I put the wuss in Worcester. Still a ton of fun, though, and the prizes for the raffle were insane. I ended up walking away with an Intel QX 9650 Extreme processor and an Antec P180 case, so that was totally righteous. So overall, the LAN was excellent. I did have a couple of questions, however. First off, there was a notable lack of PC Gamer editorial staff presence. Now, I thought I'd heard on the podcast that Logan was going to be there, but no one was, so that was pretty disappointing. The other thing was that we'd heard on the podcast, possibly a couple times, that we were going to receive a free copy of Far Cry 2 or maybe a certificate for the redemption of a copy of Far Cry 2, but that turned out not to be true. So I was just wondering what was up with those couple things. Thanks for the Showdown LAN and for everything. I love everything you guys have done in the last 15 years. Take it easy. Peace out.
Yeah, the Far Cry 2 thing, just to address that real quick, we were told that it was going to happen, and apparently it fell through at the last minute. We were really as disappointed as you guys. You know, we're really sorry about that. So we're still trying to figure out exactly what happened there. But you know, it's managed by our events team. We don't really know the ins and outs of that. All we know is what we were told to promote it. So yeah, we apologize. See, what was the other why we weren't there? We had kind of an extremely busy period there where like we could not leave the office. It was we would have liked to have been there, but our we were just stretched a little too thin. Well, Evan and I will be at the Showdown LAN this Sunday, and I guess Norm will be there. Andy, are both Andys coming?
Indeed.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So there will be a presence at this one.
More importantly, I'm going to be there Saturday.
All right, and Jeremy's going to show up. So
best weekend ever. Yeah.
And yeah, I wish I could enter in some of those raffles. I could.
Yeah, dude, this guy got hooked up. Good going, Brad.
I'm technically not employed by you guys anymore, can I? You know.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping you from entering.
Yes.
But yeah, we We will look forward to seeing some people in San Mateo.
Hey, guys. It's Rich calling from Duval, Washington. I had an upgrade question. I want to replace my video cards in my system. Right now I have two 7900 GTXs in SLI, and I'm looking to replace them with a single, more powerful card. And I've sort of lost track of video card evolution since the 7900 GTX was king. I was wondering if you could recommend something to me that would be maybe 350 to 400 at max. That's a good card. Thank you. And I also was curious if you guys had any games out there that are mainstream, really popular games that you just don't see the appeal of. I was sort of disturbed recently that I'm a huge shooter fan, and probably my two favorite games of all time are Call of Duty 1 and 2. I got halfway through Call of Duty 4, and I just thought it was awful. And I also found Crysis really boring, even though I played it all the way through. So do you have any games that you just didn't see the appeal of? Thanks. Love the podcast. Bye.
Gears of War.
Okay, the first part of that question was the graphics card thing. I guess the $300 to $400 range. I think did the GTX 280 cut down to that price point? It was
GTX 260 is at that price point.
Yeah, I know it is, but the 280 got a price cut.
I don't think it's down in the 300.
Yeah, it might not be that low.
But I was thinking the 98 X2 might be a good card because it'll still give you, it's a single card, but it'll give you SLI performance from the 9800 series.
Right, but I think the 260 outperforms that, doesn't it?
I don't know if it performs the X2.
I think it may. Problem is Logan isn't here, so we don't have the exact numbers.
I'm not up on my benchmarks.
I see Evan looking at the ATI page. What was the ATI high end right now? It's the 3870.
4870.
Yeah, 4870 or 3870. I thought it was 3870. Do they have a 4 series?
I do not see a 3870 on this page. Okay, just anecdotally, I've been using the 4870 at home, and it's been doing really well for me. It's been doing just as well as any other NVIDIA card I've ever used, so I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's their high end card right now, and it's doing very well in benchmarks, as so I've heard. Sorry,
Huh? Just glancing at Newegg, you can get a 280 for $410 after rebate.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is still the king in terms of performance. It also is the king in terms of power consumption, so you need a monster power supply for it, though. Okay, second part of the question was about what games are out there that we thought were overrated, I guess, or that we just don't get.
Sort of really popular games that are getting a lot of buzz that you just don't understand why.
Right. Well, Jeremy, why don't you pick one out?
Well, I mean, I think Gary and I both agree on Crysis very heavily. That was a game that I did not enjoy nearly as much as a lot of you guys did.
But you loved Call of Duty.
I did love Call of Duty. Yeah, so did a lot of other people. I don't know.
I think the guy saying he doesn't like Call of Duty, that's a hard game not to like. I mean,
I like shooters.
How could you not like that game?
I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. It wasn't really my cup of tea. It was just too shooting gallery for me.
I mean, aside from the single player, though, and the multiplayer in Call of Duty has such a sense of, I mean, the way you're given EXP or constantly unlocking stuff, it's like you have the immediacy and, like, immense, like, balance of this right multiplayer environment. You also have, like, this career throughout your multiplayer mode where you're getting new perks and you're getting experience and you're unlocking these mini-achievements. It's just very balanced in the way you have, like, short-term and long-term goals. It's cool.
So, Evan, what game came out that you weren't that impressed with that was well-received?
I mean, I guess Assassin's Creed was a little mixed, but I couldn't get behind it at all. I mean, the combat was so repetitive. I don't like situations where I'm just being attacked by one character and waiting for the others to swarm me.
It did remind me of an old SNL sketch where there was like a meeting of the evil ninjas. It was like a post fight like meeting. It's like, what did we do wrong? It's like, how did we say we were going to attack? All at once. And how did we attack? One at a time.
So true.
Guys, how about you?
Crysis. I mean, I'm not going to go on about it because you've heard me say it many times before. But if you're going to ask me the question, what games do I think are overrated and I just don't get, then Crysis is it.
KOTOR is another big one for me too.
Really?
Yeah, I'm that guy, I guess. I mean,
that's crazy.
That game,
I know, crazy bastard.
I'm willing to concede that I'm crazy. However, I did not get that game. I've tried to play it two or three times, and I don't get more than 20 minutes into it. I get so bored.
I'm gonna have to agree. Like, I mean, I understand the appeal, and I see that there's a lot of good stuff going on. but I just really wasn't able to get into it at all.
And dropping you guys from the call. Now, Jeremy, did you play Mass Effect by chance?
No, not yet. And probably that might be why, because my experience with their games has not been great.
Yeah, if, I mean,
see, with Mass Effect, like the first 20 minutes nearly lost me, but after that it grabbed me. So my advice, if you do play that, is stick with it past the first, you know, half hour or so.
And turn on the film grain. Everybody says turn it off, but I say turn it on.
I'm not wild about it.
I liked it.
I guess my game that came out recently that everyone else loves would be Spore. I don't know if everybody saw my little sidebar on the Spore review that Kristen wrote, but I was not that enamored of it. I find it too simplistic. You know, it's a great toy. I love the creature creator, and the vehicle creators are all lots of fun to play around with. But in terms of the gameplay itself, you know, it was mildly enjoyable the first time through, but I have no desire to go back and play again.
What about you, Andy?
Other than KOTOR, I don't know. I've been sitting here trying to think of one for the life of me, but I don't know. I haven't been able to think of one, to be totally honest.
You're just a lover, not a hater.
KOTOR is not a recent game anyway, so.
Yeah, it's true.
I've got another one if you don't have one.
Yes, go ahead.
I deeply enjoyed BioShock, but for a game that has such like a scary atmosphere, gave you such power. Like, you felt so capable in that game of just dismantling anything.
I don't know.
Within a few hours, like, all your plasmids and weapons, like, gave you so much ammo, so many items. Like, I just
You're just not playing on hard, then.
I never felt vulnerable in that game.
To disagree on the premise of the fact that after a while, I actually, BioShock is one that I, now thinking back to it, really didn't grab me because I got so disillusioned with beating up all these big daddies to the point where I realized that I wouldn't die and I would eventually just run out of shotgun ammo and creative ways to kill them that I would just, you know, I mean, at the expense of quoting Yahtzee, just, you know, wrench them until eventually they went down. And
but,
the fear that was originally instilled. I don't know. I always came back in that chamber.
It just takes away the consequence of death.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just didn't feel the fear. Like, I remember the first time I encountered one, I heard that big, you know, metal groaning sound, and I was, you know, playing in the dark and everything, and I was like, oh, man, I don't like the look of this. And then, you know, after that, it was just kind of like, okay, well, I have to lure them into a room and then just wrench them a lot and then hope that they're still there when I come back to wrench them again.
But at the same time, do you think that really took away a lot from that game? I mean, it's kind of a nitpicky.
I seem to fight them a lot. Like, I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but I seem to fight them a lot. I remember, like, when I first was really getting into it, you know, the splicers and everything, it was really a good game. Like, it was really immersive. I actually felt scared when, you know, I was walking through the first initial hallways and that one threw the garbage can at me and screamed at me. Like, I actually remember jumping a little bit. But after a while, just the big daddies kind of, the novelty wore a little thin.
But you weren't fighting big daddies that often. I mean, there were a couple of levels.
Andy,
the other ones with the guns.
Right.
There were those other ones with guns that managed to sneak up on you. I can't remember their names for the life of me.
I mean, whenever I'm introducing somebody to the tech game, I tell them to not view it as a shooter because, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of nuance in the way it controls and the feel of it as a shooter. I remember there was a lot of backlash right when the reviews started coming out about it that, like, oh, it's weighted because it basically got 9s and 10s across the board. People were really upset that, like, it wasn't as good of a shooter. It doesn't have all these elements and mechanics and whatnot, but it's really meant to be a more immersive story game. I try to paint it that way to people.
Maybe I was looking at it the wrong way then.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a competent shooter and still did, you know, all, like, an incredible story. And the atmosphere on that game was just outstanding.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do playlists real quick. Evan, what are you playing?
Oh, gosh. Well, other than Team Fortress, which I'm playing with our clan, we had a match yesterday that went sort of okay. Let's see. Peggle Knights, actually, a little bit. I'm thrilled that it's released finally.
Now, isn't it just the same exact game?
Okay, it's got some new backgrounds, and the characters have new art, and the puzzles are a lot more interesting. They're a lot more, like, mechanical, if that makes sense, just the way they move and animate and kind of interact with the puzzle itself. So that's cool. It's fun.
I didn't even know it came out. Is it on Steam?
It's not on Steam.
No, it's through PopCap. Yeah,
yeah. I guess they don't want to pay the Steam fee per copy until like a couple weeks later, I guess. Mm-hmm. So give it a week or two and it'll be on Steam. Jeremy, what are you playing?
Almost exclusively Team Fortress 2. Besides the diaper changing game and the bedtime story game and the work game, I really have so little time besides that to actually get down with my computer. But Team Fortress 2 has me coming back every night, pretty much.
I guess just to fill people in on exactly what it is you're doing at work now, just in case they're wondering.
Yeah, I'm working on PlayStation Core, which is if you have a PlayStation, you might have heard of it. It's available on the PlayStation Network. It's about 40 minutes of high definition video each month. We release this thing, and I do all the menus and the technology, make it interactive. And I work with Veronica Belmont, among some other very talented people you've probably never heard of. But it's a
Jeremy makes all the little mini games in there.
Yeah, yep. Hit L2, and you'll see what he's talking about.
But he's like a game designer now.
No, not like a game designer. I am a game.
How about you guys? What have you been playing?
Playing some Mercenaries 2.
Oh, yeah?
Kinda liking it, but it's a bit rough around the edges. It's not very polished.
It is.
It's fun. If you like to see stuff blow up, then it definitely delivers that. There's no question.
Are you playing on PC or on Xbox?
On Xbox.
Yeah. Does it on Xbox? Does it do the thing where if you've got like a or like whenever you're around NPCs that are like on your side, or even if they're not on your side, they like constantly repeat dialogue saying like, "He's right behind that thing. He's right behind that thing. He's right behind that."
Yeah, it's there's a lot of like real, and this is one of my pet peeves. When you get really dumb AI behavior like that, it totally takes you out of the world and just reminds you that you're playing a buggy game. Like there was I couldn't believe this is in there. One of the early missions is like, okay, one of the very first missions, you got to go over to this. This mercenary stronghold and meet your contact who's going to give you your next mission. And I went over there, and the guy's like kind of standing there behind a little table. And I ran over to him, and I just kind of accidentally like ran into him and nudged him with my elbow. And he kind of ragdolled down on the floor, and it was like, oh, mission over. You've killed your contact.
Really? Wow.
I know I'm a pretty dangerous dude, but I didn't know I could kill people accidentally with my elbows without even trying.
I never heard that.
So that was, I don't know, maybe it was a bug just for me, but like I said, I mean, if you don't mind the scrappiness of it, like the cutscenes and the graphics are all just a little bit like they needed a little bit more, polish than they got. It's okay if you're willing to pay that price for watching stuff explode a lot, because I mean, if you like to blow stuff up, this is definitely the game for you. So
absolutely,
that appeals. And I just picked up Rock Band 2, but I haven't had a chance to play it yet.
You know, on that note with Mercenaries 2, I went from playing Mercenaries 2 like a couple weeks ago for the review, and then moved on to Crisis Warhead just recently. And I'm like, why can't I blow everything up? It's like I would run like my Jeep into a little wall or something, and I would like bounce off. And it's like, why isn't that? Why didn't I just crash through that like I do in Mercenaries? So I mean, even though Mercenaries is very rough, as Gaz says, it does have its charms. Andy Bauman.
I've been playing Assassin's Creed for the last couple of weeks, amongst the work game, like Jeremy. But
what do you think of Evan's criticism?
I was thinking of this thing that happened to me like just the other day that so perfectly embodies what he's saying. But I still really like the gameplay. It's just a pure gameplay experience. Like there's really nothing other than the gameplay that's keeping me hooked. But what happened was I had my target like cornered against this wall. There was about 20 guards trying to attack me, and I was just like, oh, like f- this, I'm just gonna try and like sword fight my target. And like there was just so many people trying to attack me, but eventually I like killed my target, and then it goes into that like cutscene thing when you kill your targets, and it right. seems so ridiculous that there was just like 50 people surrounding me, and I'm like able to talk to my guy as I'm like slowly killing him. But it's still a fun game, I think so.
You called time out is what that was.
It totally. It's like, hold on, everybody. I got an assassin to make, and then we can carry our battle on.
But, you know, one thing that's kind of similar between that and Mercenaries 2 is the guys you're assassinating generally aren't that much tougher than, like, everybody else. So it's almost anticlimactic. I mean, you're expecting kind of like a boss fight or something, no. And then you just go and kill them, and it's, you know, just like killing everybody else.
Right. You just stab their neck.
Right. But, you know, it's still getting to them is half the fun. Mercenaries does do the cool thing with the extractions. You guys have been playing with those?
Oh, I mean, I haven't played it enough to get into some of the higher level missions. I've been just going to be kind of dicking around in the early missions. I don't know if I'm really going to... I'm actually more kind of inclined, I think, to go back to GTA 4 and finish that because, I don't know, I'm pretty snobby these days about my games having polish. And this game doesn't have a lot of that. And it's not just graphically. There's a lot of little kind of control things. It just feels like it could have used like a couple more months, just, you know, having all the edges buffed down and, you know, a little bit of testing for the control schemes, and it's a little bit fiddly in places, and I don't know, I'm kind of a perfectionist these days. I demand better than that.
Right, but the high value target missions are kind of cool because you go in and you have to knock the guy out, handcuff him, and then call in a helicopter and then load him onto the helicopter, so it's a little bit more in-depth than just killing him.
I do like that sequence where you commandeer a tank, where you kind of wrestle with the guy, headbutt him, and he drops back down inside the hatch, and then you just drop a grenade inside the hatch
right.
to finish him off. There's
a bunch
of
variations on that.
Cutscenes, yeah.
So, Andy Salisbury, have we talked to you yet about how you've been playing? I forget.
I have been, of course, who would have guessed, World of Warcraft. And then I've also, you know, like
you
everybody
never
else
stopped?
Since. No. I mean, I did
really?
For a little while, but that was only because I was just starting up classes and I just wanted to focus on them full time. But, you know, I've still been, of course, into World of Warcraft very much. And then Team Fortress 2. I've seen a lot of everybody out there. It's pretty fun. And then I'm getting ready to play the school game again. And I'm getting ready to play the Drive 12 hours straight game.
Oh, man.
That's this afternoon.
Me
and I
see
a cheat code for that.
How has WoW held its interest for you this whole time?
I'm just really into raiding. So my guild and I, like, we've been pushing through Sunwell now, which is the very last dungeon of the game. And we're two bosses away from Kil'jaeden, the very last boss. And, you know, just the excitement of... I mean, I know it's relatively...
So there's still things you haven't done yet?
Yeah, we still have two more bosses left in the game. And while it's admittedly difficult... You know, it's really fun. Like, you're out there with the same group of guys. You just, you know, it's definitely, everybody's very serious about getting this stuff done. But at the same time, we recognize that it's a video game and we're out there to enjoy it and have fun.
Wow, it's serious business.
You sound awful defensive.
It is. No, it's just, it's fun. It's something I really enjoy doing, you know? So,
I
hear
you. I've been there, man.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm last on the list. I've been playing. Well, I played Mercs for the review last month, and then I was playing. I'm playing Crisis Warhead right now, and I already gave my thoughts on that. I guess the other thing I've been tinkering with a lot was there's a mod for Sons of the Solar Empire. It's a Star Trek mod. It's based on the Dominion War era, which is out of Deep Space Nine, but it's called Sacrifice of Angels 2. It's done by a guy who worked on a Homeworld 1 mod called Sacrifice of Angels, and it's really coming along. I mean, it's like a demo release right now, so it's only got, you know, a few ships on each side, and they're not fully balanced or anything. But it's still the best Star Trek game that's come out in a long time, which is sad. But yeah, I'm having fun playing around with that. And I
best Star Trek game since what?
Since it was the last good Star Trek game.
Well, I guess it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, it wasn't.
Oh.
It was. I guess it was okay, but it was not the game it should have been. I guess maybe like Starfleet Command 2, maybe maybe. I guess I liked Bridge Commander, but not because of the game, but just because you could play around in it a lot. Elite Force was an okay game, but it didn't feel like Star Trek at all because they made it too shootery. And yeah, but yeah, it's been a while since there's been a really good Star Trek game. All those games were a while back. I'm just glad to see somebody taking it into their own hands. Okay, so I guess that's about all the time we've got today, and then some. If you want to check out gamesradar.com/PC, you can subscribe to the magazine. You can call in and ask us a question at Andy. What's the number?
The number is Jeremy. Do you remember the number? I'm putting you on the spot.
877-404-1337 extension 724.
Yeah.
And he's still got it.
There we go.
What a badass.
It's really easy to remember because it's like 404 error online and then 1337, right?
Yeah, and then 724 is PCG.
PCG.
You can also email us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. And so for myself, Evan Lottie, Andy Bauman, Andy Salisbury, Gary Witta, and Jeremy Williams, that'll be it for us this week. See you guys
next
time.
Peace out.
Bye.
Take care of yourselves.
Hey guys.
Oh yeah. Shit, Jeremy.
Hello.
What's up?
What's going on, Andy?
Dude. Hey.
Oh, how much? How are you?
I'm good.
It's been a long time.
You wanna hang out this weekend?